Okay, with that, let me trade you for Gene Carrio, because Gene is going to be up as part of the next portions. Nick will then talk about efforts that have gone on both in storage and transportation across the last month, 6 weeks.
Okay.
Hey, Kurt, this is Pat Miller from Western Cascade. I'm just listening in, just so when you get to that point, if you have any questions, I'll be here.
Okay. So, thank you, Pat. I was about to give my summary, and when I got to the part where I would say your name, I would say an industry member, but I'll say your name this time. So, Ada has been working with Pat at Western Cascade, a LNG trailer vendor, to test and prototype 13,500-gallon trailer. That trailer currently is in existence. It's in Washington State being tested. Ada has made contact with FNG, FNG's current trucking company, as well as Pat at Western Cascade, about testing that trailer in Alaska. We expect that trailer to be available in Alaska after Labor Day. At that point, we would fill it full of, the plan is to fill it full of LNG. And test running the route between Cook Inlet and Fairbanks, as well as North Slope and Fairbanks, as well as work with the State of Alaska Department of Transportation weights and measures. So we would actually put the trailer full of LNG on a scale to test to make sure that it would be compatible with Alaska laws.
Go ahead, Gary.
I continue not to understand this. So why are we just doing a 13,500? And why aren't we, I've traveled 7 times to Valdez in the last 2 months, and I meet those big ultra-low sulfur diesel tankers. You see a half dozen of them every trip. So I look at those and I say, why wouldn't that be propane? Why wouldn't that be LNG? Why couldn't we just put LNG in that? I understand all the paper stuff, but why are we limiting ourselves to just one big trailer and not a big trailer and a pup, just like the low sulfur diesel folks are doing?
I wouldn't say we're limiting ourselves. It's definitely something we explore. At this point, we have an LNG, and Pat, correct me if I'm wrong, we have an LNG trailer that's up to 13,500 in the state of Washington that's not currently equipped to put a pup on the back. As I understand, you could take a very similar design and put the pup trailer on the back. But right now, we have this existing trailer prototype in existence. And that's the one we'll be testing. But we are not.
Let me help. The answer is first, second, and third. Because right now they're running 10,000-gallon trailers, and 13,500 aren't being run and haven't been approved by weights and measures.
What is it that I see on the road? What are those?
Those are diesel or fuel tanks.
I understand.
Yeah, that have been approved for use in the state of Alaska. 13,500-gallon LNG tanks have not. So we're going to get one up here. We're going to get it approved by weights and measures. We're going to run it to and from Fairbanks. We're going to run it to and from the North Slope, because we have North Slope proposals, and they weigh heavily on the economics of the larger. If indeed they prove viable, then one would say, yes, let's put a pup on the back and test the pup. Well, Dan, do you want to weigh in? Because I think you have before.
I think it has to do with weight.
Yeah.
You know, a truck can only pull so much, regardless of volume.
So, and
the gradations between Fairbanks and Prudhoe are different between Fairbanks and Anchorage. And so,
tandems aren't allowed on the road between Fairbanks and Prudhoe, regardless of the type of fuel. So, any of those tankers you see now are only on the Parks Highway or the Glen Highway. So as we were evaluating tankers, we were focused on the Prudhoe Bay, and so the question really prior to today where we're at was maximizing the capacity for that haul, the Prudhoe Bay and Fairbanks, and so that's a single trailer. Nobody in the U.S. is hauling double LNG trailers, so from my point of view, the hesitancy in the past is, did I want to be the first guy doing it? And so given where we were at in the business in the past, and developing and growing, we decided it wasn't somewhere we wanted to be venturing and becoming the first hauler of tandem LNG trailers. Now in Australia, they have three. They got three of them behind them. They were just flat to go. So I think it's a valid question to look at, you know, what are the benefits, drawbacks, costs, weight ratios of hauling a dual trailer. And I don't think looking at that 13,000 gallon limits that into the next step.
So to talk me off the bridge, so are we talking about testing 13,500 this winter and then with the goal of testing 13,500 plus up for next winter?
Mm-hmm. Well, the goal is to see if it passes and then decide where, if and how and where it will work after that. But
hey, Kurt, can I add to this? Would you mind? This is Pat Miller at Western Cascade.
Go ahead.
Hi, guys. I'm not sure who's in the meeting here today, but, you know, if we back up just a little bit, you know, we're the Heil Trailer International dealer for Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii. And we've been very successful group for a very long time in the Alaska market, building petroleum and propane units. And, you know, we currently, and for quite some time now, we've been building a 53-foot five-axle semi that is ruggedized for the Alaska market, that is being used on a daily basis on the haul road from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay and return. We also have been very successful in implementing a five-axle semi with a four-axle pull trailer behind it. And those are operating every day on three of your highways, and they're operating anywhere from 117 feet to 120 feet overall length from the front of the truck to the back of the trailer. And in that combination, it is all weights and measures in Alaska DOT certified, and they're hauling approximately 14,000 gallons of Jet A in one pull between the 53-foot semi and the four-axle pull trailer. Now, we have taken that with Heil. We have taken that exact same subframe and axle combination for the five-axle 53-foot. It's really a tri-axle semi-trailer with two lift axles forward. That combination has already been approved by Alaska DOT, and it already meets all of the weight requirements for the roads for weight distribution. Using a tractor that's 244 inches to 288 inches on the wheelbase, and you know, typically the haul road trucks are in that 260 plus inch wheelbase, like the 280 is a real common wheelbase. This 53-foot LNG semi-trailer has also been designed with a winter and a summer weight distribution application. If it were to be used on the haul road, we've made an allowance to lift one of the axles strategically to put 40, don't quote me to this because I'm at a trade show, I had to step out, to put like 40 or 42,000 pounds on the drive axles on the truck because that's what they need when they're pulling those steep grades. And so we've built that allowance into our trailer to be able to offload the weight from the trailer, put it forward onto the truck. Tremendous amount of thought has gone into this. And the whole suspension and axle combination has all been ruggedized. It's all galvanized, the whole bit. Now, this design already has a four-axle pull design that's done, just not with an LNG tank on it. So right now, the 53-foot LNG trailer is, I don't have the spec in front of me, approximately 15,800 gallon gross gallons. So if we can fill that to, say, 85 or 86%, depending on the temperature of the product and weight of the product at the time it's loaded, we're going to be in great shape. We think we're going to be 12,500 gallons plus just with the 53-foot semi. So, you know, we just think that, you know, your cost per gallon is going to drop dramatically compared to what's being hauled on the tandem axle trailers that FNG is using right now. Those are like 10,000-gallon trailers, and from what I've been told, you're hauling, you know, 7,800 to 8,500 gallons. So if we can pick up another 4,000 or 5,000 gallons for just on the trailer, I think that's a big plus for the Energy Authority and for the, you know, for the customers, because it's going to really help drop that transportation cost per gallon. So, we're there. We've already done it. We just haven't released the trailer. I've had it in Seattle at our shop for probably 4 months now, and we're just doing more testing and more due diligence, and we're going to be actually putting some loads in it here, we hope, in the next 2 weeks to haul locally with it, and then our plan is to ship it up to Anchorage and allow data or the Alaska Energy Authority to use it and test it, and we'll prove this whole concept for you and then move forward. And like I said, we have the port, we have the four axle semi trailer. It's in the plans to build one. We just have not built it in the LNG.
Thank you.
That's where we are today, and we do have relationships with all of the trucking companies up there, and the majority of them are using our five axle semis right now for hauling petroleum products.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry to get us down that rabbit trail, but everybody's working.
That's how you get answers.
Thank you.
Very informative.
So,
gentlemen, do you have any questions? Because I'd like to step back in the trade show. I'm available if you need me. Kurt can just send me a text, and I'll step back out.
We're moving to storage. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Okay, storage. Thank you. So, since our last board meeting, I met with Dan and the consultant he had to discuss the current status of this 5.25 million-gallon storage tank, what it would take to get that back online, the timeline involved, so internally we could start putting that into our internal modeling. That's fed directly into early work that we've done to start modeling the future source of seasonal swing supply, either through plant capacity or storage. And we're getting to the point where we're going to work with FNG and IGU to make sure we're all working off common seasonal swing scenarios and common storage and plant scenarios so we can come before the board when we get to the investment point of the HB105, where we need a full plan where we can lay out, this is our projection for meeting that seasonal swing between plant and storage. The other critical component of that is that, it's kind of the medium to long term. The other critical component short term is doing analysis of temporary storage so that as soon as new LNG supply becomes available, if LNG is the chosen technology to use, that we have the ability to provide into the newly built IGU system, potentially Golden Valley, and then expanded
energy. Temporary, visualize the steel tanks that you saw in your tour of Fairbanks. They're not really temporary, they're smaller steel tanks, but it's just a common term. And so it could end up in Glen Allen or Tope just as well as Fairbanks once large storage is built. Okay, with that, we're going to skip over distribution and local control entity because that's going to be Ted and Mark. And I'm going to go to Gene on conversion.
Thank you. The Fairbanks Northstar Borough initiated a working conversion working group after doing their initial evaluation of and re-looking at the cardinal information on the number of people to anticipate that would convert. There was a lot of discussion at that time of whether there would be the manpower to convert and things of that nature. They worked with the mechanical contractors in Fairbanks, but then went into a little bit of a lull while the legislation was moving through the process this year to re-energize this overall project. They had a meeting about 2 weeks ago to sort of restart that working group. And pick up the indications from local lenders that local lenders could bring money to help the financing of the individual homeowners' conversion to use natural gas. The date for that meeting shifted by a week, and so unfortunately I was not able to be there in person. I actually had a trip to D.C. planned. I did call in for the very beginning of the meeting, and they've got another one planned for the next week or two, which I will be at in person. While I was in D.C., though, I continued to track down some information on a potential source of federal money that could help with conversions. The source of money is through the USDA, so I met with individuals there that actually operate the program. It's a relatively new program for the USDA. It's been in existence for less than 2 years, and so different states are just figuring out how to utilize it. It is called the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Loan Program. It can result in funds being available through an electric co-op. The real link is with electric co-ops, but it provides low-cost capital for electric co-op customers to perform energy efficiency and conservation improvements to their homes. The program is not just focused on electricity. It specifically has been broadened so that it talks about the consumers actually switching the type of energy that they use in their home. And so switching from heating fuel to natural gas, the appliances that you use are so much more efficient than a fuel oil furnace that it would qualify for the an energy efficient action. It switches to a lower emitting fuel, and it is an approved alternative fuel or fuel switch. The gentleman that I met with actually used to be a member of the national organization that I am a member of, representing Puerto Rico. So when I went there with a representative from the governor's office, it was a very good meeting. He basically said, we've got a program. It's been in place for over a year now. It's underutilized. We will work with you very cooperatively to be creative, to figure out how it can work. So it may be that funds could flow through the electric co-op to the consumer or through the electric co-op to the gas utilities. There's a couple of different routes there that we need to check on. But depending on the length of payback that you want to get, you can get the interest rate down fairly low. And I'm currently reading through the Federal Registers and all the regulations on that. Just as an example, I have actually started energy evaluation of my own home, which is in University West. I came back from my two-week trip and was pleased to see 2 6-inch natural gas pipes crossing at the end of my driveway. I didn't know that that would happen, but I'm pleased. And so I checked with Mr. Britton this morning, and all of that subdivision is being piped in anticipation of gas being available. I have long been an advocate of the individual consumers in Fairbanks taking advantage of the AHFC energy rebate because, again, switching to natural gas is an energy efficient step, and it does qualify for a rebate under that program, which is an existing program. It has funds already, and I think as many of the Fairbanks consumers as possible should be encouraged to utilize that program. The rater came out, evaluated my home, indicated what improvements I could make, how that would step me up on the ladder towards a 5-star home, and basically the report comes back saying that the single most important thing that I can do is change out my heating plan. And by doing so, just that alone will jump me up enough points to qualify for a $4,000 rebate. So my $10,000 conversion now becomes $6,000 because the state will step in and pick up more of it. In addition, gas is not available at this point. I would love to jump right to a gas-fired, high-efficiency, completely condensing boiler, very high efficiency, but gas is not available. So my decision as a consumer is, do I make that conversion right now and take my existing 30-year-old boiler, which is 73% efficient, and jump it up into the mid to high 80s, enjoy savings of a fuel oil for the next year or two until gas is made available, and then convert that over to natural gas. I ultimately might not get that 95% efficient because I didn't go right to a fully condensing boiler. But I, as the consumer, have to make those decisions. In addition, if I do it now, I take myself out of that massive number of people that may, in fact, want to convert all at once when gas is available, and put myself into a category that the cutting out of the old appliance, insertion of the new one's all done. Now you're just replacing the front plate and burner unit on, that's already gotten savings. So I am going to be taking this information now to that next working conversion group and talking to the two utilities on how we encourage people in phase one of the IGU build out in the new areas in the FNG, that the pipes are being run in the streets. How do we advise the consumers of this information and then link up that AHSC program to a potential on-bill financing program that could be financed either the local lenders who said that they could have a source of money, or through one of these federal sources, which actually may be beneficial in cost.